That you found in a dumpster.
That the design.
Right.
Not
right.
that quick.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Sorry about that. So Dick Rattan, I think I don't need to tell this crowd, but just in case, Dick Rattan flew the Voyager around the world. When he did so, they had a control room where they had big ham radios and manuals and maps and weather charts and all that stuff. The building that I crashed through was the Voyager mission control.
Yeah. Way to go.
It was waiting to be towed to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to go to the Air Force Museum, was what I was told. In my defense, they've been waiting for 20 years for the truck to come get it. So.
Now it's a now you can be seen on the next Breaking Bad series.
That's right.
Yeah, it's going to be great. That's awesome. So I bring that up because, you know, what we're talking about tonight is dangerous stuff. How do you get back on that horse when you've had a failure? When you're dreaming big and you're swinging for the fences, and I'm going to ask all of you this because I'm sure you've all been there. How do you get back on the horse and ride? And Peter, you want to start off on that? We'll just go down the line.
Well, sure. I guess with the successful for airplane out of the way, I did start a V2, but the goals for that were a little bit different. Maybe have a little bit slightly better performing airplane that I could probably build more time on. But unfortunately, I kind of went through that program really fast. I built that airplane in a month. So that was a little bit too fast, but I wanted to see if I could do it in a month, but not fly it too far. So we were just like, okay, well, nothing's really working right. So all we're going to do is just run down the runway and just hop it just a little bit and go no further than that. It cannot go around the pattern. It can't do anything else. So we did it, and it's actually flying pretty good, but it is on the very, very aft limit of the CG that I could possibly have in this. Plus, the landing gear is a little bit too high, so when you're taxiing right here, your rudder's blanked out, and you have very little marginal control. But it's a twin, so I can just drive it a little bit with the throttles until I get it up to airspeed so I got airflow over my rudder. So we do this one or two times, and then on the third time, I go a little bit higher, but then I get hit by a slight gust of wind, and I come down a little bit sideways. I bounced it on the mains, and I knew the mains were under-designed, but I just like, I'm going to throw these away anyways. I don't really care if I bang them up.
Yeah, because he bought them at the hardware store.
It's basically a quarter-inch 6061, which is probably the wrong thing about this. I just wanted to see if I could make it like a model airplane.
Right.
But after doing more research, I should use something a little bit thicker, maybe go to 2024 or 7075, some other types of metals. So basically, I came down a little sideways, got on one wheel, got on the other one, finally started a ground loop, but this is when the battery pack slid, hit my rudder pedals, and I was like, we got no rudders anymore, so here's the ground loop, and collapse.
Yeah.
The wheel goes under, and like, I just feels like I just lay down in a lawn chair. So.
Sam, does that story play well at the nightclubs and the bars back in Dayton? Is that, Elliot, how do you handle it? What do you do when you have to crawl back on?
So that particular wreck was pretty hard to deal with. I was flying again within about 3 days. I had another control failure about a week later, aileron jam on a high-speed dive test. I thought I was recovered within a week. It turned out that it was about 3-4 months where I was still seeing steady improvements as far as just the anxiety with being in the cockpit. But I'm confident that I was aggressive about getting back in the cockpit. I was trying to prove to myself that I hadn't been affected by it. But at the same time, I'm confident that it could have been a lot worse. I think it was important to get back in it. And I think if there's anything that I've learned from watching Peter and guys like him playing on the web is that how important it is to just keep moving and it's been really inspiring for me to watch you go through the process. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lot of what home building is about. I think when Dick's tail kit shows up in the mail, a rivet's intimidating. You know, a rivet squeezer is intimidating, right? Like, why is the aluminum covered in plastic? Like, these are all very basic questions that are all scary. And what's cool about home building is you march through these series of steps, everything from managing a budget to trying to understand what the schedule is to dealing with the big bureaucracy of the FAA. All these things are hard, and they're things you've never done before. And when you're done, you have this chunk of material that you can take your wife for a ride or whatever that shows that you made that progress. And that's freaking awesome. I mean, that's what EAA is to me. So.
What about you, Dick?
Well, I don't have any stories like that. My test flights have not always been totally boring. I have flown a variety of airplanes in addition to my own, including a single and two-place quickie. And a different slant on it, on that. A friend of mine had built the first kit-built quickie 2 with a 75-horse Volkswagen conversion, whatever. flew it for a while, then he painted it. Nobody told him not to paint stripes on the leading edge of the canard. So he took off and didn't have enough pitch authority to keep the nose up to land. Kind of the downside of building what was then an extremely popular, highly publicized kit airplane. At the time that we were selling maybe 10% as much. But anyway, he was in flight and he had to fly around for hours to burn off his forward fuel to get enough pitch authority to make a hot landing. Sanded the paint stripes off the canard so he had enough authority. Flew it for a while and asked me to fly it because he thought that I was a qualified pilot. I flew it, gave him an evaluation, which was, it's definitely different, it's challenging in this way, that way. He never flew it again, sold it. He says, I was really worried. I thought I'd lost my touch. You restored my confidence, but I don't want this airplane. That's kind of the other side of the latest and greatest and mostest and most desirable, etc. Somebody bought the airplane and damaged it badly on the first flight, blah, blah, blah. So there's something to be said for something that's maybe conservative, not quite as exciting. I remember after flying that, I'd flown to the airport where he was in my prototype RV4, really, and got back in it. Of course, it's what I knew and what had the handling qualities that I loved. And one of the things about the Quickie was that it was very fuel efficient. I remember my thought as I took off and was flying was, I don't care if I burn twice as much fuel, this is the way I want to fly. And we got 10,000 people that feel that way, so.
Amen.
Anyway, you see, it just, and I'd flown the single seat Quickie, which had the 20 horse Onan, and just a typical day, and I was lighter then than I am now, but at the end of a 5,000 foot runway, I was maybe 50 feet high. There's a certain anxiety to that, and again, the handling qualities of the airplane were different. A lot of people, probably people out here, would have trouble or challenge, find it challenging to fly one of the RVs. The Quickie is a lot different. At least the RV handles similar to the Cessna and the Piper with a little quicker response, a little more demanding in that way. But those are things you have to consider. And then this was not a one-of-a-kind experiment. This was something that was being sold and widely accepted at the time. But over time, you don't see 10,000 of them.
That's right. Now listen, in all seriousness, I have to ask this question. I want to be the one that asks it because I don't want anybody out here to have to ask it. But is it true that you received hate mail when you developed the nose wheel version of the RV? Because as we all know, nose wheel pilots, you know, they're nose wheel pilots, right, Dick? I mean, come on now. What is that
no,
true?
No, there was no hate mail. We did, though, on my prototype RV6, we got the special, well, the end number, which was 66, Romeo Victor. On the tri-gear, it was 666, Romeo Victor. I got a couple letters about that.
Yeah, nothing like an omen.
And I'm not an atheist, but I didn't pay attention to that.
I want to get to something here that's going to make us all pay attention, because as we talk about cool stuff and innovative in flight, Elliot has transitioned now. We're gonna pick on Elliot a little bit here. He has transitioned from some of the coolest jobs to now working in some of the smokiest jobs, and that is with Sanders, who we all know and love, with the C-Furies and the smoke generators. And you have a little Sanders clip here. It's two in one. It's a two-in-one deal here that we're going to see.
So it's going to take a little bit of build-up, if that's all right.
Let's build it up, and then we're going to get to Q&A here in a few minutes.
Sorry to yammer. So we have a smoke generator. It looks like a little bomb. You can put on a 14-inch rack on the bottom of usually military aircraft, lots of trainers, BAE Hawk, that kind of thing. It's a self-contained smoke generator. So up in the front is a little bit of gasoline, and then there's a smoke oil tank, and then there's a combustion chamber in the back where we insert a little bit of gas into some ram air that's coming in, little spark plug, get a little bit of fire going, and then inject oil to make smoke come out the back. So you can, instead of having smoke come off the center line of the airplane, you can actually move that smoke off the center line. So for instance, if you're doing a big rolling maneuver, you can see the wingtips and you can trace that path, which ends up being really nice. nice. The company sold on the order of 500 of these over the last 40 years. And recently there's been some problems with the customers. Some certain demo pilots were trying some maneuvers and they were having troubles with what we would call unlights. So the smoke generator is making smoke and then it's not and then it is again. And the problem is the video is all very hush-hush and they can't tell us what exactly is going on, so they would send me their demo. And the joke is that, you know, test pilot, engineer, but not a demo pilot. So I don't even know what these maneuvers are. So, you know, I get out my Art Scholl book, that's a joke, but there was supposed to be funny. They send me, that was a good laugh, I like that. They send me 26 maneuvers. And so the problem is, like, for instance, they say I'm going to do a slow roll. I can do a slow roll positive G, I can do a slow roll negative G, I can do a zero G. And these are very important for the fuel system and the oil system inside the generator. So what I did was I took all 26 points and I got up in the extra and I flew the points in the extra. So the first video is going to be the extra video. I took just one point. So the point that was most interesting to me was, the point that's most interesting for this circle was an outside turn. So they said they were doing 180 degree negative 2 to negative 3 G turn at 300 knots. And that was one of the places where they were having problems. So here's me flying that point in the extra. So it's going to be called extra inverted, something like that, or awesome.